Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Thanks to Chris and Kira for those great tunes on this Tuesday afternoon. It is the 19th of May and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Mayo hero Lee Keegan joins us to talk about big changes and big moments.
Teasing ball inside here for Andy Moran, but Simons is near him, gives it in beautifully. Keegan! He scored again! Did it last year! He's done it in the 2017 final. Lee Keegan on 54 minutes.
We look at the sustainability of the return of horse racing for our racecourses.
As well as the other sports calling for a relief fund, plus Irish champion Aoife Cook on the Dublin Marathon title she won't be defending this year.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Okay guys, I'll kick us off because we've a competition tonight. We've a brilliant O'Neill's GLA to give away. So with thanks to O'Neill's, who are the largest sportswear manufacturers in Ireland, we have an O'Neill's hooded GLA as worn by some of the top models in Irish sport, Ruby Walsh, Brian Cody, Davy Fitz, all the good looking ones.
Can I have one of these ones as well?
You've a rack full of them, don't you? Well, do
I
you know what you can do?
I want one for every day of the week.
Well, you can visit O'Neill's.com to shop there. And Marie, you'll be glad to know they have a huge range of outdoor games now available on that website. That's O'Neill's.com. Be perfect for your back garden. Get some giant Jenga, some rebounders. That's what that place needs.
Well, we have a long summer ahead, so sounds good.
Okay, so to win this O'Neill's Gilet, simple question. All we want is the answer to O'Neill's was founded in 1918. But why were both the 1918 All-Ireland Football and Hurling Finals played in 1919? So they were delayed. So name, where you're from, and the answer to 51552 to be in with a chance to win a brilliant O'Neill's hooded gilet. And you can find all their range on O'Neill's.com.
And Donica, you mentioned three male managers and Ruby. It's also available to females, if anyone listening.
There you go. I just don't think I've seen a female wear it as well as the three lads, the gilet. It's a unique top, I find.
You didn't even know what a gilet was about 6 months ago. Have you been studying form ever since?
Of course he did. He was wearing them all his life. He just didn't realise what they were called. He just thought they were sleeveless jackets. He didn't realise they actually had a name of their own.
No,
anyway,
man.
Marie, any breaking sports news today? I think there wasn't some monster news in rugby, was there?
If only we knew somebody from Munster that could fill
know,
us in.
They could fill us in.
Well, I'm from Clare. I'll do it.
Paul O'Connell.
Munster head coach Joan Van Grand confirmed that new signing Damien Delandé has arrived in Limerick and he's already completed his 14-day self-isolation period. So I'd say all the Munster fans are eagle-eyed down there trying to spot him walking around the street.
How can he get in?
Through the airport?
You're probably asking uncomfortable questions here now, Donica. More news from Munster as well. Matt Gallagher, Roman Salanoa and Orgie Simon will commence their contracts with the province on July 1st. That's not that far away. And Van Gran also confirmed today that the province will make an addition to their coaching staff over the next while.
Is that you, Dunners? For the only job you don't have.
But like, there's a fairly impressive coaching ticket there already.
Who'd be in the market for that job now? Where are they looking to strengthen?
Yeah, I'm honestly asking the same question because you've Steve Larkham, who you would think would look after backs and attack. The kicking game has become massive, Marie, and then maybe individual skills could be an area. They've JP Ferreira looking after the defence. Graham Rowntree and Johan Van Gran himself are both top quality forward coaches. Like, Van Gran is seen as that director of rugby role, but he's coached South Africa when they won a World Cup, you know, involved with that pack, so he knows what good is up front. So, but it's obviously an area that he feels maybe could give him a point of difference. I'd say he's nearly headhunting a certain person for a certain role that he thinks could.
Go on.
I don't know.
This would be great breaking news in Game On, don't you?
I wish I'd breaking news to get it, but like obviously the Munster man of me, I'd love to see Ron O'Gara back in some format coaching Munster in time. And I definitely like, it's obviously you look at the likes of Felix Jones who's gone on and done brilliant with South Africa, but there's something right about Rog in time. But I don't know, is it the right move for him yet? Because I know he does want to be the main man, top of the bus, calling the shots.
Oh, so you're putting it out there then. Come home, Rog.
Well, I'd like it. I think we've a brilliant, strong coaching team, but just personally, in my own view, I'd love someone homegrown from the environment that knows the culture, knows what it means, and I'm not taking away that those coaches absolutely know it, but I think sometimes it's good to, you know, that's what was, great about the coaches, the Niall O'Donovans, the Declan Kidneys, the Anthony Foley's. You could go to the wall for those guys because they knew what it meant to the area, they knew what it was important about. I don't take it away from any of the coaches, but I think we've lovely balance now in the best of expertise. I'd love a good, strong Munster man in there.
It's good.
Interesting. There's more news just breaking as well, Marie, on the race in front, in France, that is, and the French government has just issued notice that racing in Paris is going to have to close down again. Paris is a hotspot for the coronavirus in France, so all racing at Longchamp, Saint-Cloud, Auteuil, and even out as far as Chantilly will have to cease operation with immediate effect, which will mean that the French 1,000 and 2,000 guineas due to be staged at the end of this month will be moved north to Deauville. Now, they still can race in Normandy and in the east of the country, but all racing at its main tracks in Paris is cancelled as of now.
Big blow, Ruby.
Big setback, but look, I think France are dividing the country into different zones, red zones and green zones, and Paris is in the red zone, so that's the end of the racing there, but it will continue in Deauville and whatever other tracks there are. There's 217 race courses in France. I'm sure they'll find other places to have the races.
I hate saying it, but it's a new norm. We're seeing with the Premier League today, six players tested positive for COVID-19 out of a batch of 748 players and staff. So I think we're going to have to get used to the amount of testing within these kind of pro sports that we're going to get moments like that we're racing.
Yeah, do you think you'd take that ratio, wouldn't it? 600 and 700 and whatever. That's a fairly low number.
I thought it was going to be higher.
That's a good result. Yeah, I thought the same, yeah.
I know they're not telling us where they are or who they are, but I would be really curious to see if they're kind of from the same group of people or same team, or if they were a backroom team and a couple of players together.
The nosy journalist in you have to get the answer, don't you?
I just want to know, okay?
And you get it, Marie. I'm sure as eggs are eggs, someone will absolutely spit that
If anyone
one.
Knows, text us in. 51552.
We'll have an answer for
soon. What about Watford captain Troy Deeney saying that he's uncomfortable returning to training? I think, you know, we got the news at all 20 clubs. But, of course, you know, that's, the club saying it. It's very different when you hear he's chatting about his young baby and that he'd feel uncomfortable putting them at risk. I think we're going to see that a little bit more, and I think
everybody's
going
to have their own opinion, aren't they?
And should be entitled to it. Like his comments are, safety is most important to him, not the money in his back pocket. And I think it's good that players are coming out and saying it, you know, instead of going along with it.
Absolutely, and everyone is entitled to their own choice on these things, and no one should be put under pressure to go out and do something that they don't want to. And everybody's circumstances are different, and we've discussed that quite a bit. You know, people are living with parents, with elderly parents, with family members who have underlying health conditions, and their health and safety has to come first.
I did think, you though, Marie, when I was reading that the Premier League have plans for a trophy celebration.
What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
It's madness, isn't it?
It is madness if that's in the kind of the COVID plan, isn't it?
A virtual handing over of the trophy to Liverpool. Big webinar. Liverpool fans only.
A giant Zoom.
I think anyone that has been in a crowd when Liverpool fans were going into a game will know that there will be very little about it that will be virtual if Liverpool do win the Premier League. Now, staying with journalism, since you did slag me, I have been very curious about Erling Haaland's behaviour. His interviews are earning him a lot of headlines, more than his goals nearly at this stage, because a lot of people are talking about how he's behaving in his post-match interviews. I'm going to play this clip and then just get your reaction to it. As sports people now turn media.
Is it the kind of message you want to send out?
Yes.
Would you tell us the message?
To my fans.
What next step would you like to do here in this club for you personally?
To train fully with the team every day.
What did you like about it? The playing style, the fans, the colours, I don't know.
Yeah, everything that you said there, I like, so yeah.
So for anyone who doesn't know who Erling Haaland is, he's a teenage striking sensation. He is playing fantastic football in the Bundesliga for Dortmund. He's on the radar of clubs all over the world. He's set to be the next big thing, but he's not very effusive in his interviews.
When I heard it first, I burst out laughing. I just thought his English was poor. But you wonder, is there more to it? And I just think you're right. He's a young talent. He's going to be a superstar of it. And I think there... Again, I just go back to environments that he might be used to. I think there's a responsibility on senior players around him to tell him, pull his head in. You don't, you know, you're dealing with media, you have to respect their work as well. And he's not, maybe he doesn't want to talk. Well, then just don't do it instead of going out and just, you know, obviously messing around with the interviews and the chat.
Not everybody's a talker, though, are they? And yeah, I agree with you. If he's not going to talk, definitely deflect the opportunity and let somebody else do the talking. But do journalists want to talk to somebody else on the team? No, they want to talk to him. He's the guy scoring all the goals. He's the guy they want to talk to. But does he have a responsibility? I don't think so. And I think when I watched further through that, he said that his responsibility was in playing soccer, and that's all he wanted to do. He found interviews boring, so at least he was honest.
Well, I understand that, but he should be shown respect for people doing their job, because that's what journalists and reporters are doing. You're doing a job and you're trying to do to the best of your ability. And as a young person, or any person, like, no matter what they're doing, whether it's doing an interview or someone who's a physio, I think you should treat people who are doing their jobs with respect. And I think the way that he dealt with the journalists asking the questions wasn't respectful at all. Now, there has been a suggestion that he thought it was a lot of fun, but I didn't find it funny. And as a parent of young children, I don't want them to look at him and think that that's the right way to treat people who are essentially just doing their jobs. Like, journalists aren't trying to catch people out or ask any trick questions. The questions were very straightforward. He could have elaborated a little
bit. I suppose
he
could have said thank you and please, and that might have made it all acceptable.
No, I totally agree with you, Marie. I think whatever about the journalists, and I know they have a job to do, and some of them aren't. Some of them are trying to trip him up and try to get a scoop out of him. But the journalists are trying to reflect the supporters. So everyone at the moment, he's an incredible talent. Everyone wants to know more about him. And you're right. Like, it's more so as a supporter looking on with young kids. Like, you're looking at it there, but who do you want someone to look up to? And you want, you know, he's a brilliant, talented player, but you want him to have to align themselves with someone with good values that's able to speak up, and you just get none of that for him. So if he wants to leave his football, do the talk and just stay on the pitch, but stay away from media if you're, and you know, whatever he might feel about journalists, it's the supporters he's leaving down, because we know nothing about him.
There is an argument that he does have 4 million followers on Instagram and he can connect with his fans that way, but I don't think that's good enough, because he is in front of the fans and the viewers and the people who are forking out the money for the jerseys, who are the likes of me. And you want him to be able to, you want to be able to tell the people watching him that that is the right way to behave. And if you are going to look up to people, I don't know, this goes down a whole other route, but sports people, whether they like it or not, are role models for young people.
I think Gary Lineker made a really good point the night we were chatting to him, which you can listen back to on the podcast, available on Good
Plug, Donica.
There he is, even on Spotify, that Marie has.
Star.
But if you listen to what he says, he was there, like, we forget how young they are. And I think you're right. I think he's an incredible talent, but he is very young. And, you know, you do stupid things. And this is just maybe a little bit silly out of him, and he finds it a bit of fun. And we've all done silly things, you know, in media. I remember there was a big thing with the Irish squad for a while, is who could get in. Rala used to have a saying at the end of the itinerary for every day, and it was if you could get Rala's saying into the media. And the famous one is Brian O'Driscoll's, Janie, I've put myself under the pump, but I think it's knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit, wisdom is not putting it in a fruit salad. That was on Rala's itinerary, and it was a great laugh, and it got all picked up. But I think there's a difference in this. I think, you know, if we were being disrespectful, I know senior players would have pulled us in.
I think we're being a bit harsh on him. If that's the worst thing he ever does in life,
He'll have lived a fine life. He scores goals. He does what he's supposed to do on the pitch. I think he's a fine example as a footballer. And if he's not a talker, he's not a talker. Not everybody's a talker. If he can communicate via social media and he's more comfortable doing that, so be it. But not everybody's comfortable in front of a camera. Not everybody's comfortable with a microphone in front of them. And I don't believe where it says on any professional player's contract that he or she must be able to talk. Must be able to play football. For soccer players, for jockeys, ride horses.
Some can talk and others can't. It would be in some contracts, though, that you have media obligations and that you know what I mean? Even, like, he could be speaking at a sponsors event there. And you're right, sponsors will be interested in the team because he's a part of that team and he's going to be a superstar. So you just want him to converse. But I agree with you, if he's not good at media, just don't.
In those clips, though, it's like he's choosing not to speak. Like, he's mumbling at the press officer, he's trying to get away. Like, he's just been quite rude.
I know nothing about
him. He's not telling you to leave him alone. Please don't ask me another question.
No, he's not.
That's why I read into that.
You loved him on Friday.
I did.
That's what I read into it. But see, you're a nosy journalist. Go on, keep sticking until he says something that I want.
More than a word would do me. Standards are low enough.
You should ask questions that you can't give one word answers to.
He's a hell of a dancer. Did you see his goal celebration?
I did.
Brilliant social isolation. Oh well, social distancing.
Okay, lads, let's
take
a break.
And he can dance, but he can't talk.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with Aoife Cook.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Right, obviously disappointing news today that the Dublin Marathon was cancelled, and we're delighted to be joined by Aoife Cook. Aoife, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Disappointing news today.
It was disappointing, I suppose, to have it announced officially. I suppose it was questionable with the while, but I guess there was all that always that little bit of hope left that it would go ahead, so it is a bit of a blow, yeah.
Was it the right call, Aoife? We're still quite a number of months away.
To be honest, I think it is at this stage. You know, it is a massive event, you know, with 25,000 people taking part. I think that's how many entries they had for this year anyway. And I suppose we don't know how things are going to go with regards to the COVID over the next few months. But I think they did need to make a call on it, I think it was good that they did make it early, instead of having people, you know, wondering and, you know, kind of starting their training maybe for it to be cancelled down along the line anyway.
If I know every marathon, like a Dublin marathon has 25,000 people or whatever, but every marathon also has professional athletes who are running it for a reason other than just to fundraise or things like that. Do you think maybe they could have delayed the decision for the professional athletes? I mean, if the Olympics are going to come back around in Tokyo in 2021, that marathon might have helped people get a qualifying time.
Yeah, well, you know, it is for the elites. I suppose, you know, the elites are in a very tough position at the moment because it's what we do, you know. But to be honest, it's like, I know it's a hard call to make, and, you know, it would have been a huge cost to the Dublin Marathon to put it ahead. Put it on just for elites, I guess. It's kind of different to the likes of London that would have it televised every year as well, I think. So, you know, there is a chance that the likes of London or the other majors could go ahead with elite-only fields, but for the likes of kind of Dublin or kind of, you know, big marathons but smaller than the majors, they're in a tough spot because they don't get that kind of funding from the TV rights and things like that, and to close down a whole city for the day just for the elites is, you know, I suppose it's not cost effective for them.
The race organiser today in their statement said that they explored many alternatives for running the event safely, but none were viable. Do you know what any of these alternatives were?
I don't, to be honest. I don't know kind of what they might have been looking at with regards to that. They might have thought about an elite-only field for a while, or, you know, kind of starting in waves, you know, kind of with a good bit of time apart or whatnot. But because of, I suppose, the sheer amount of people that would be taking part, you know, that would have taken probably hours in itself in order for everybody to get started safely, I think. And I suppose with regards to, you know, handing out drinks and all of that kind of stuff, there's a lot to kind of be taken into account with it. So I'm sure they kind of thought of a lot of alternatives for all of those, but I suppose kind of in the safest way possible, you know, they couldn't really make it viable, I suppose.
With social distancing measures looking like they're going to be here for a while, is there some sort of way, do you think, of making marathon running safer than any sort of a mass participation start? You mentioned the starting in waves. Is that something you'd be in favour of, and you think that could be a fair way to do things?
It could be, I guess, going forward. As I said, it's difficult for it to happen with, you know, such a huge amount of people, but it might be possible to, you know, for smaller events, you know, of maybe 500 to 1,000 runners, that it might be viable and possible to do, you know, to, I suppose, start the elite in one wave and then kind of go with times for everyone else and maybe start them, you know, 5 minutes apart or something, you know. I think it is something that would be possible down along the line. And I know people, you know, who are organising all events at the moment are being very cautious, you know, because, you know, nobody wants to have that event that's going to cause a surge again. So I think it's the safest at the moment.
Yeah. Aoife, what's it mean to you? Obviously, national champion at the KBC Dublin Marathon. How are you going to have to rejog your training or, you know, even the chance to retain your title?
Yeah, it's... I was, you know, and as I said, in the back of my mind, I was kind of holding out hope that the event would go ahead, because I really did want to do it and, you know, I suppose try to defend my title again this year. And I suppose, you know, with the event not going on at all, you know, the decision, you know, is out of my hands. But I suppose I have to kind of rethink how I'm going to train now over the next few months. And we don't really know what races might even come up over the next few months. Will there be any even locally or abroad or anything like that? Will we have a chance to even go abroad, you know, later on in the year, November, December, to run a marathon? We don't know. So at the moment, I'm not marathon specific training, because it takes a big toll on the body, you know, when you're marathon training and doing the big huge mileage and the big long ones at the weekends, and you can't really go doing that indefinitely without, you know, something at the end. So I'm kind of running kind of as if I'm training for a kind of a half marathon, so that the mileage isn't as big, and I don't have to do like big 20 milers at the weekend, but I'm still maintaining that fitness at the moment and should be able to transition over to marathon training if an opportunity arises over the next few months.
Aoife, I was reading your schedule during the lockdown where you were confined to 2 kilometres, and what running you were doing since that has been extended out to 5K. Have you discovered even more routes for your training?
I have, yeah. So it's nice to be able to get out that little bit further. So in the 2K radius, it was quite hilly around where I am. So it's nice to get a few flatter routes. It's a bit easier on the legs. And there's a few nice parks now in my 5K radius I can get out to. Ballincollig Regional Park, which is a nice place where you can do, you know, many different number of routes around there, so you can easily get an 8 to 10 mile run even just in that park. So it definitely opens the options up a little bit more.
And just your age, Aoife, at 33, like an Olympics being pushed back, is that something that extra time could benefit you in the long run?
Yeah, for me, I think it's not a bad thing. It could actually work out in my benefit. With the Olympics being scheduled for 2020, it would have been a big ask, I guess, to try and jump forward another, you know, maybe 5 minutes off the time I got in Dublin. But with the extra year now, it gives me that extra time to really knuckle down and take a nice chunk off what I did in Dublin, hopefully, and that will just make me more competitive when it comes to it internationally.
Aoife, you mentioned that time you ran in Dublin last October, and obviously that left you sort of 3 minutes outside Olympic qualification time right then, and you went from there onto a training camp in Kenya. If athletics was to get back on an even keel and you had some sort of target, would you be heading back to altitude training in Kenya again this year?
It's hard to tell now this year just because of the situation. I would love to, and it was in my plans, you know, if COVID never happened, for me to go to Kenya again maybe January next year for another 6 weeks. I do feel it benefited me a good bit, so it is something that I wanted to kind of add into my training on a yearly basis. Whether it'll be possible this next January, if things will be safe enough to travel over there, then I probably would, but just going to play it by ear for now.
You also said that you had stepped or changed your training from sort of running 70 miles a week when you were preparing for Amsterdam in 2017 to running 100 miles a week in preparation for Dublin. If the Olympics was set somewhere in stone, when would you be aiming to get back up to that sort of training?
Well, I'm not too far off it at the moment. Mileage-wise, I'm running 80, 90 at the moment, so I'm still chipping away at the mileage. Just, I suppose, the sessions, the harder sessions aren't as intense at the moment. So I'm kind of hoping that by, you know, early next year, maybe, you know, February, if Seville goes ahead, that I should be able to do that as a qualifier. So if that's the case, I would get back into full-fledged marathon training maybe around November and train towards that. So I'd give myself maybe the 3 months of, you know, specific marathon training.
Right, but if you're running 100 kilometres a week around the roads of Cork, you will become a very familiar face to many people around there.
Yeah,
I mean, we wish you the very best of luck. Thanks a million, Aoife.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Now, if all was right in the world, lads, we'd be reflecting on the championship games that were just over. We'd be having great all-GA chats, but we're not.
We won't be talking about the championship until about 2024, the way you're going on.
There he is, the Grim Reaper's out. Well done, Ruby.
No, I'm only quoting the GA, so Solicitan has to go before they can play.
That could be never. Anyway, there is an upside to all this. Lee Keegan is free to take a call from us, and he joins us now on the line, Mayo star. Of course, Lee, how are you?
Good, how are you? I was happier till I heard them lovely comments in studio. So.
2024, Ruby's prediction.
I think my retirement will be well signed by then.
Look, Lee, it's a strange time. We're talking about it for the last 8 weeks, and it's still strange in ways. It's actually getting a bit stranger, I'd nearly say. But no football. What's life like for you? What are you doing?
I suppose I'm lucky enough at the moment, to be honest. I'm working away as normal, so I've been able to keep some kind of routine, to be honest. So from that perspective, my days have been pretty filled. My wife then is a teacher, so she's been working from home. And I suppose the biggest void so far, I suppose, this time of year, as you said, championship, we're trying to, I suppose, keep ourselves taken over with kind of nothing in mind at the moment, which is quite hard to keep ourselves motivated. We should be potentially planning for Connacht semi-final. We were due to play each 2 weeks ago, so it was a strange one, that, I suppose, prepping yourself for a big championship game. But listen, that's the nature of the beast at the moment. I suppose first and foremost, everyone's healthy and in good safe arms, and then hopefully in the next 2 weeks we'll know better how the year's going to be shaping up.
I went on my holidays to Westport last year, Lee, and it was buzzing down there. What's life like down there now, just given the amount of tourism that usually is going on there?
Yeah, I suppose coming into March, April time, you see a big kick in tourism for the town, like in terms of groups coming in the weekend off the train, and I suppose just coming in for the beaches and scenery and bits like that. So it's definitely been changed. I've quoted a few times that I've been able to get parking on Main Street quite regularly now. It's like a ghost town at times during the week. But I suppose the last kind of 2 weeks now, I've seen a bit of an increase in terms of, you know, the restrictions been lightly lifted a little bit. There's more people going back to work. There's a bit more atmosphere in the town, and obviously all within in coordination with the HSE. So, but yeah, I suppose I used to love going up to town during the week. There's always a great atmosphere with the cafes and restaurants and bits like that. So it's definitely been a huge change from my perspective. And I suppose just looking at it, like, I suppose Westport's kind of a fast-paced town in terms of what it's up to. It's definitely brought a lot of people probably back down to earth a little bit in terms of the slower pace, and brought a bit more perspective on life and what's it about. So definitely missing the buzz and atmosphere in the town, but I suppose that's just the way everyone's probably feeling that pinch at the moment nationwide.
And just with, like, obviously football being so uncertain and tourism being so uncertain as well, and it being those two things being such a big part of the town, what's the mood of the people like there?
I suppose between, like, we're quite lucky in one aspect that we have a couple of big companies in Westford, so Allergan and, like, the company I'm working in, Steris, there is quite a high number of employment there at the moment. So there's still quite a lot of people kind of around the town coming into town, obviously, because they're necessary jobs, people are, they're traveling quite a bit. So in that case, there's still a good lot of people coming in out of the town. But I suppose just, you know, Westford is quite a popular time for GA, and even from a club perspective, to have nothing, like, I mean, soccer, it's a big sport town in general anyway. I suppose rugby, soccer and Gaelic are three big sports in the town, and they're well numbered. So it's definitely been a big change for people, especially because we are a sport mad town here, like most around the country. And I suppose that appetite for sport, to have something on to watch, I think we're tuning into the Bundesliga on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, just for something just to watch. So yeah, it's definitely been a big void, a big gap to fill, so it is at the moment. But I suppose, again, just in, like, Westford has been lucky in terms of the employment we have, and just seen a few of the cafes doing takeaways now at the moment. There is a bit more of an atmosphere around, although be it, it's a bit slower than what we're usually used to.
Lee, just chatting to Aoife Cook there, she's kind of training in a bit of a holding pattern. You've probably been tipping away yourself, but are you missing the competition side of it now? This time of the year, cut grass, this is when you should be tugging out and hitting the heights.
Yeah, and the weather been as nice as it is, it's been a bit of a killer, to be honest. I suppose, similar to the guys, probably say, when you don't really have a target in mind, it's very hard to keep motivated. But also then, you know, in that, I suppose, that competitive nature, when you're in a group, you want to measure where you're at, especially this time of year when you're prepping for championship. This is what we're training all year for, what we're getting our bodies right for. So I'm definitely missing the competitive edge, that kind of one-on-one competition, or that even marking my opponent, just seeing where they're at, seeing where I'm at, what I need to work on, where I need to get for the next couple of weeks in order to get my body right and my head right. So, and then obviously just missing the bit of crack, to be honest, with the team. Suppose we obviously haven't been really in contact in close quarters in terms of the phone and stuff like that, but just been in that environment in the change room, having that bit of buzz, bit of crack about it. Joe, I said, with the grass getting cut and the summer evenings getting longer, this is the time of year where we really embrace as GAA players. So it's been quite difficult, but again, I suppose we're very privileged where we're able to train. I have a little mini gym here. I have plenty of hay here I can run around as well. So from that point of view, I've been able to take over, but definitely missing that, I suppose, that competitive nature when you're in a team sport.
We know competitive football is a long way off, but would you even love the opportunity to go into the pitch in Westport and kick the ball around with four or five lads and hone your skills a bit? Would you like that opportunity to be afforded to you?
Yeah, I to be honest, I think so. All within, of course, within the guidance and the guidelines that were given. I to be honest, I was a little bit shocked that we couldn't, to be honest. I mean, there's GAA pitches nearly at every corner of the country, and I mean, go in and do it in the right manner, even just for, you know, again, all in your distance, just have a chat with guys, see where their heads are at, have a kick around. You know, it's very hard. You have a couple of balls yourself, because there's only so much kicking up the wall you can do after a couple of weeks. You know, it's very hard to measure how you're getting on when you go down to the pitch with two or three lads and start doing a few bits differently, and then obviously a bit of running and stuff like that. There's a bit of competitive spirit there as well, so that's been definitely a bit of a tricky one for guys. But I suppose in the back of your mind, you know, you're trying to keep yourself at the highest peak, because, you know, when you want to get back, if we get back, sorry, I mean, you want to be able to keep competing at the highest standard you can possibly. But I do think, I did find a bit strange that we couldn't go down to our local GAA pitches, all within in the guidelines, as I mentioned, and respecting the rules. And just for, I suppose, even from a mental health point of view, just to get people out of the house and just something different to fill up an evening or two during the week. So
you mentioned your work in Lee, like, there's plenty of younger lads in particular who are back from college and they don't have jobs, and they would only love to go down to the pitch to see their friends and just to have some sort of an outlet to get out and something to work towards, just with mental health in mind more than anything.
100%, and that's, I totally agree with that. I suppose, again, I'm very lucky I can be working away and keeping some form of routine, but for the guys that are finished college since March, I mean, I suppose they were probably looking at the roadmap and thinking potentially there was a chance there where they could meet up with a couple of club lads, even just maybe four of them, go down for a kickabout for a couple of hours, kill a bit of time. Their days are very long still, to be honest, and, you know, with the employment sector quite low at the moment for themselves trying to get work, you know, it is difficult times for these people. And I mean, as I said, even mentally, just to get out, just to get about, just to have a conversation with someone, kicking the ball 10 yards to each other, like that would have been a huge positive for a lot of people around the country, and they're probably, you know, they're really looking forward to something like that, and then not be able to do it then has probably been a bit of a kick in the teeth, to be honest, a little bit. But listen, again, we just have to follow the guidelines. I mean, I would have loved to have been able to go into a GAA pitch as much as possible, but you just have to respect what they have to do.
This is a real exercise in patience for everyone, really, because we're all just kind of watching, waiting, hoping. How's James Horan coping with his situation?
Good. James is a very smart man. I suppose he's managed it quite well, to be honest. You know, when this all came about at the early stages, we obviously were having a couple of Zoom calls a week just discussing maybe potential outcomes and when we may be back and kind of plans we were. But to fair, James kind of put everything on the long finger, and he just made it very clear that at this time and during everyone's life that our families are more important and football had to take a backward step, to be honest. So although we kept in some close quarters in terms of conversations, we haven't really been doing that much. And like, we've been ticking away with our gym sessions running, but in terms of having group chats over Zoom calls, whatever, we haven't really done a lot, to be honest, because I think James knows there's no point going on to these Zoom calls and having nothing to talk about, potentially, because we can't go reflecting back on the last couple of years or even the league, because we were doing that regularly anyway. So I mean, to have nothing to look forward to have to discuss, sorry, in the call, James said there's no point kind of filling lads' heads up with stuff that's not really relevant at the moment. So I suppose when we know how phase one and phase two go in terms of the roadmap and what we're looking at, then we'll probably start to up the ante in terms of maybe calls and maybe start planning out the year potentially based on how things are going and how to lift restrictions a bit more. So I think James is quite smart. He knows family comes first, safety comes first, and then that's the way he's approached the whole outcome so far during the year.
So have you taken a bit of a break, Lee?
Break from each other, yes, but we're still training very hard.
And like for a lot of players as well, Lee, who've been on the road quite a long time, that's not necessarily a bad thing, I'd imagine.
No. Again, I think we all live in a world where it's very fast-paced and we're going, and I suppose it took something quite crazy to happen like this to probably put everything into perspective. Even myself, just I haven't spent this much time at home and seen my partner in this long for so, you know, for this length of time. So I think she's ready to divorce me already, to be honest, because I've been at home so much, like, you know. But it has, to be honest, it's been a again, it's not a change we wanted necessarily, but I mean, through the hands of whatever, it just happened. And it's definitely probably, as you said, more for the older guys, probably to appreciate the bit of time and space away from football, because it does take over quite a substantial amount of your week and your life, because you're in such a bubble for so long. So I mean, for some of the older guys with family and partners a bit like that, it's definitely probably been a little breather to probably reflect and just get themselves right, maybe it be injuries or just catch up with their families, I mean their partner or kids. So I've definitely tried to embrace it as best I can. Well, we've had no option, but I said, I think my wife is ready for me to start leaving the house a bit more, to be honest.
I'd say there's a club there.
I won't speak for this in the case.
Sorry, Ruby, I couldn't hear you there. We're having issues with sound. I'd like to apologise to everybody.
We've lost poor old Ruby.
We've lost Ruby. We still have Lee, though.
Lee, it can be damaging, though, that type of training on your own. You know the way when you're with a group, you can measure off each other, and then when you're even within a programme, you find nowadays no one cuts corners. Everyone will work hard. There's nearly a tendency, especially, I'd say, in your squad, to overtrain.
Yes, there is. I think it can be a fine balance, to be honest. I find sometimes maybe I am a good place in terms of I think I'm training to the best of my ability, but it's only when you actually go back in and you measure, I suppose, the guys that you play in the same position or you think are at the same standard, and they're a couple of yards ahead of you, and then you start questioning yourself, geez, was I doing the stuff I thought I was doing? So if from that point of view, it's difficult. But yeah, I think, I suppose, the way GAA is a little bit, we do tend to overtrain as players. I suppose there's a bit of guilt if you don't do something, maybe. And I'm definitely one of those people, probably a bit of a criminal now, because I just love training. But I suppose getting through the years, I am going into my third first year, which is not that old, but in terms of the way the game has gone, you need to mind your body a bit more. And I know myself, in terms of that bit of downtime is very important to get away from training, just not for your body physically, but more mentally as well, just to say, take a night off here, put the feet up and just reassess and go pick it up again tomorrow. So again, we're not ones to cut corners, but I think sometimes we can just be a bit smarter in how we train our bodies and get ourselves right.
I know it's very hard to predict what's going to happen, but if we do have a championship in October or November and we look at the weather that was there last year, it was quite a heavy winter, that usually lends itself to different football than you'd see in the summer. Is that the kind of the slower style? Do you think that would suit you better or not?
Probably hard to know, to be honest. I think every team wants summer football, to be honest. I don't think we're any different, if I'm being totally honest. I suppose we're in a country that the weather is probably bad 90% of the time, so when you get that 10% of good weather, you want to be involved in it and have the sun splitting the pitch and you can spin a bit of ball around. So I do agree, it'll be definitely a bit slower, but if they're going to condense it, the games will be coming thick and fast, and then players trying to get their bodies adapted to that slower weather, that heavier pitch will be quite difficult, to be honest. But it's something, again, it's probably hard to think about it at this time. Like, to be honest, I'm struggling when I'm looking at my window and the sun is coming in and just looking at the freshly cut grass. I can't be out there kicking the ball. That's what I'm struggling with at the moment. So I am. But it's definitely going to be one. I suppose we're used to it during the league. I suppose we were probably lucky enough with how the league went in terms of we got so much bad weather for the four or five rounds of the league that we probably acclimatised ourselves quite well to it. So I imagine we probably will quick enough if that occurs in October.
And Lee, are you happy enough to wait? Like, if kind of this limbo period, are you happy enough to wait and see what happens? Or at some stage, would you like a call made on the season?
I think probably, I'll speak probably for nearly every player, I think we'd all have a call probably sooner rather than later, if I'm being honest. Not even to put us out of our misery, probably just to give us something in mind. So if we're to pull this year, at least then we have a target of potentially going back next year. Or if they're saying we're going back in October, if that's near enough definite. And listen, there's no definites in this world at the moment, unfortunately, with everything going on. So if they said there's a massive possibility that we're going back in October, then by all means, we have a target in our head and we can start planning accordingly to how we're going to assess ourselves and train our bodies, get ready for it. So I just think that's been kind of frustrating, but I know the GAA in a really tough position where, you know, it's very hard to make that decision. And I suppose we're a bit different to sports worldwide. We're amateurs, so we have to think of our day-to-day life in terms of our jobs. You know, I'd have to discuss certain things in my workplace. I'm sure a lot of people do the same. Obviously, talk to my family, see how they feel about me be playing. So there's a lot more decisions than just the GSA, and we're good to go in October. I suppose a lot of individuals will have to assess themselves and see how it works in their day-to-day life just before they make that huge decision. But again, I think as a nation, we'd love the CGA back. The thought of no summer football is tough, but the thought of no football at all can be a bit harder. But listen, I think we're very spoiled as it is in terms of we're able to be out and about, to be active and doing things we love doing.
Yeah, that's for sure. But I just can't imagine a year going by without somebody saying Mayo for Sambly. Yeah.
I know, my ears are not ringing at the moment. So
Lee, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. And sure, look, we're just going to have to, like everybody else, wait and see and hope that we get some football and hurling back over the next few months.
Thanks a million, guys. Love it on the show.
Thanks a million. Now, so I suppose one thing, there is a few issues that comes with not having sport, and that is that there are a lot of sporting bodies who are going to struggle to survive. And the Federation of Irish Sport released a statement yesterday and they called for a relief fund to help these sporting bodies. Mary O'Connor, who's the CEO of the Federation of Irish Sport, was talking to Sarah McInerney this morning on RTÉ Radio 1.
Gymnastics Ireland is saying that I think 96% of their clubs wouldn't survive the next 3 to 6 months under the current conditions.
That's correct. And also you have Athletics Ireland estimating a cost of 1.5 million. You have Cycling Ireland talking about an 84% drop in racing membership on this time last year. One third of their income of 4.5 million is from membership. So that's an awful lot of financial implication for those organisations. Obviously we welcome the return to sport for some organisations, but the reality is they're not functioning in the way they were. Our national governing bodies of sport receive funding from Sport Ireland, but they also generate an awful lot of income themselves, and the opportunity for that now has stopped. We're calling on the government to establish a resilience fund similar to the fund that was established in Sport New Zealand. And in April, the New Zealand government introduced a resilience fund of $70 million for the sports sector. And last week, they just 2 days ago, actually, they introduced a $25 million in addition to that, 25 million New Zealand dollars in addition to that. The sports sector in this country employs 40,000 people. It has an annual consumer spending worth 2.7 billion to the Irish economy. So when people think about sport, they often think about playing it, participating in it, watching it, being entertained by it. But they have to understand as well, as having a huge benefit for people's physical and emotional well-being, it also has a huge value to the economy of Ireland.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Before the break, you were listening to Mary O'Connor speaking about funding for sport in Ireland and what might be needed going forward. And as you know, racing is set to resume on June the 8th, but I don't think it'll be all plain sailing for horse racing either. And HRI did announce huge prize money cuts across the board yesterday when it released its race schedule. And going to join us on the line to talk through it possibly is Richie Forrest, leaving Irish editor of the Irish Racing Post. Richie, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good, Richie. Obviously, the announcement came yesterday from Horse Racing Ireland, the fixture list and what races there would be. Were you surprised to see the cuts in prize money?
I wasn't, to be honest, Ruby. I think they've probably made a very prudent call there. I'd imagine in the short term they could have continued, with reasonably normal levels of prize money. But I think the overriding concern here for sports bodies and all sorts of, all parts of society in general is that all the economists will tell you we're facing into probably a fairly serious recession. Some of them will tell you we're facing into a depression. So I think with that in mind, they had to take evasive action and take a very cautious approach to the matter. And they've done it, I think, in a very fair way. The lower tier races, as you know, are down 10% only. The group ones for the rest of the year will be down up to 50%. It's a difficult time. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how long these various restrictions and so on are going to last. But I know there's been a surplus in the government finances for the past couple of years. I think we can all fairly safely say that that's going to disappear as of now.
So just overall, so if some of the government surplus disappears, Richie, and we know that prize money is down, like what's going to be the knock-on effect? Like what do you think is going to happen to racing when we do come out of this?
It's very hard to say, but I think, again, the same as every other sector and sports body, and I know racing comes under the agriculture remit, so it's not a sport in the sense that the GA would be considered a sport because it is such a big industry underneath it, racing has. But it's going to have a huge impact. There's no two ways about it, from the smallest pinhooker or breeder up to the funding we get from the industry. It's going to have a massive impact. From the moment this thing kicked off and we had to close down racing, it was March 24th, my primary concern from that point became for the tracks, and I would have fairly serious concerns that, we have 26 tracks in Ireland. Whether we'll have 26 tracks in a couple of years' time, I would just be worried about that. I see today already Peterborough Greyhound Stadium is closed as a result of this coronavirus. I noticed in France as well, again today, they've closed racing in the Paris region because it's a red, in a red zone over there, and they have been racing there for the past week. So that's put a stop to their gallop, if you pardon the pun. But for tracks, it's been a perfect storm, I suppose you could call it. They've lost, for starters, they've been shut down for the past couple of months. When they open, they're going to be racing behind closed doors, so they're not going to be getting any revenue in through the gate. Their media rights income, which has underpinned their businesses for the past 10 or 15 years, is going to be cut massively as long as betting shops are closed. So the concern for tracks would be if they can ride out the storm, depending. Look, it's going to come down to how long all this goes on, for how long the betting shops are closed and so on, and how long the restrictions are in place in terms of the attendances. It just seems hard to see how they can all sustain. I mean, Paddy Walsh of AIR, the Association of Irish Racecourses, said recently that they're happy to do their bit for the industry to get the show back on the road, but he admitted it's not sustainable for tracks to continue the way they will have to do for the first couple of months. So it is very worrying.
If you look at 88 fixtures lost to date, or 87, will be lost by the time racing resumes on June the 8th. And then you add in the extra costs of what they're going to have to spend to race. I mean, the weather has saved, a lot of us mentally through this lockdown.
Yeah.
But this weather has been extremely hard on racecourses. The ground has gotten quicker, grass isn't growing. The costs of running the race meeting are going to be extremely high. And I just wonder, with no gate receipts, and as you say, with the betting shops closed, how these racecourses are going to survive. I would have the very same fears as Richie that we might lose a racecourse or two when all this is said and done.
And if you look historically, Ruby, during recessions, if that's what we're facing, we tend to lose a track or two along the way. You know, we lost Tralee in 2008. We've lost Phoenix Park and Baldoyle and places like that in previous years. They are vulnerable. They're just, at the end of the day, their business is the same as any other. If you do the sums on the 87 fixtures we've lost so far and up to the end of, up to June the 8th, say, between March 24 and June the 8th, the media rights revenue alone is worth approximately 50 grand a meeting for them. That works out at 4.5 million. So that alone is a huge sum of money that the courses have to absorb, that sort of loss. And then you've got, and the other thing about this, like a lot of businesses, the revenues haven't decreased, they've stopped completely. So whether it's the media rights money, whether it's the hospitality income, whether it's the gate receipts, whether it's the money that the bookmakers' fees generate for HRI, corporate bookings, advertising, sponsorship is going to fall off a cliff, I'd imagine, once we get back going, because you're not going to have the same product to sell for racing. It's a huge, huge blow to them. And I just don't know if the funding is going to be there to provide the support they're going to need over the next couple of years. As I said at the outset, HRI's funding alone, I mean, you'd be concerned how well that will hold up for 2021. It came in at 67.2 million for 2020. Now, will it be close to that in 2021? You'd have to be concerned, especially when you look at the priorities that are going to be there in relation to the public health situation we have at the moment.
It is, but racing is an industry that does repay way above the 67 million that it gets. But look, the race courses are going to definitely need some propping up in the near future, so fingers crossed they can. Richie, we've ran out of time, I'm afraid, but thanks a million for taking our call.
Thank you.
Thanks, Richie. Don't care if we're a competition winner.
We absolutely do. Emma Rafferty from Westmead has won our competition in our brilliant Gillet from O'Neill's competition, Ireland's largest sports manufacturer, and the answer was because of the Spanish flu in 1918. The two All-Irelands were put back into January 1919, so it gives us all hope, Marie, that we could see a championship yet. Well done, Emma.
And it gives Emma a Gillet.
She's in a Gillet. Send us on a photo.
Ruby, we have a text in for you. Do you realise that if Man United got 3 points every week since the lockdown began and Liverpool got none, that you would still be behind Liverpool?
But virtual presentation. There'll still be a couple of weeks left, Marie, so don't worry, we'd catch you.
Text from you, Marie.
It wasn't over yet.
A-R-P.
Okay, guys, that is all we have time for.
Game on 2FM.